your latest project is Annapolis.
Yes.
And so what appealed to you about that film?
You know, Annapolis happened through The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Mm-hmm.
I had scored The Greatest Game Ever Played right after Constantine. I was mixing Greatest Game Ever Played. Strangely enough, Klaus Badelt was scoring Annapolis before me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very strange, but he wasn't able to do it, or something happened, or I don't know. It's one of those things that he ended up not finishing the score, so they had to start over. And strangely enough, just the timing, I was mixing Greatest Game at the time, and Disney said, you know what, this director of Annapolis is meeting with composers right now, why don't you go over and meet him? And I went over and met him, and we just they showed me the film, and I thought, oh man, we got to do this. I've got an idea for it already. It's weird. It's one of those films I saw, and the theme immediately jumped in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow I managed the director to. I convinced him to bring me on board. They were enthusiastic. You know, we just go for it like a really anthemic point of view, you know. So that's how we did it. We just dove right in, and I went from Greatest Game right into Annapolis with not a day in between.
So it actually sounded like you drew your inspiration for the score actually from the film, but where do you generally draw your inspirations from for scores?
Well, you know, you always hope it comes from the film. There's the rare case that you're doing a film and you just, either because of a director giving almost too specific direction,
mm-hmm.
then you never want to base it on something else besides just watching the film and going for it. You know, I generally don't listen to the temp scores, so for me that really, in a sense, makes it easier because I can just go for it on my own. One of the funniest things I ever run into is when people write things about scores and they analyze them. It's always hilarious to me when I find someone say, "Well, clearly Brian was listening to the temp for such and such movie, which was such and such movie," which of course is always incorrect. I have not yet found a single person to actually be right about what they thought the movie's temp was. So all that whole thing, that's garbage. There's no, you know, you don't listen to temps. I don't know if other people do, but you don't. It's too treacherous. So you just dive in and you hope the story speaks to you. Now, it could be someday I turn on a film and I sit down at the piano and silence rings out and I have no inspiration. Who knows? Because I don't know where it comes from. But up till now, I'll watch the film, and that's what tells me what to write.
So now, how much did director Justin Lin become involved with the score?
He was like right on about his involvement on it. He wanted to collaborate from a creative point of view, but he didn't want to micromanage. I think he's really got the right balance. I wrote some themes, and I said, "Hey, you know, Justin, what we need for the story, you need the main theme needs to be able to be played on a guitar by itself, really spare, and it works as kind of a blue collar, almost bluesy feel. And then that same thing needs to be able to be played on a big orchestra,
mm-hmm.
and sound epic, and you know, the same melody, which is hard because typically bluesy melodies don't work as epic melodies. They're, you
right.
know, so that was the big challenge, and he just wanted to make sure that I got that down. And so it's a moment that I was able to play on the guitar the same theme, and then show how it could be played on a big orchestra. He said, "Okay, go for it." You know, he had certain notes about the score here and there that he wanted me to do, but he really let it fly. He was able to go off and start shooting Fast and Furious in Japan at the same time I was writing the score, and then he was able to come back just in time for when I was conducting the sessions, the orchestra at Warner Brothers. So it was a really, I really liked that guy. I liked Justin and his editor Fred Raskin. They're super cool guys. I think that was the ideal way to score a film, honestly.
Okay. Now, earlier in the interview, you mentioned the importance of silence as a composing tool. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, I find something that happens with directors, and especially with studios now, there's a danger of blanketing the entire movie with score. Just kind of saying, okay, here's frame one, here's the last frame, write music for everything in between. And the problem is that that you lose your dynamics. You know, something is so much more powerful when you have breaths in between cues. You know, I find that just like anything, you have a melody or a phrase, and then you drop to silence for, you know, 5-6 seconds for a few bars, and then you come back in. It's so much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter what kind of film it is. A comedy, a silent beat can be hilarious. You know, it goes out for a second, or a scary movie. You know, the fact that there is silence sometime, and then you know, punctuations of music make it much more frightening than if you just had scary music going the whole time. You know, it makes it less scary. So I think that goes with anything. The fact that silence increases your dynamics by such a great degree, if you properly use it, the silence can be the most powerful part of the score.
Okay. All right. Well, now, when you work on a film, you get to see the final product long before an audience sees it.
Yeah.
Does that ruin the movie-going experience for you?
It certainly does. Now, the cool thing about certain movies that if I score them enough ahead of time, by the time I've seen the theater, I've kind of forgotten how it holds together, and that's always cool. When I, like with Annapolis, it had been a while. I'd been doing other films and everything, and so when I saw it, it was fresh again. But certainly doing seeing the films as they go with knowing all the, it's like peeling away the curtain, and you see the Wizard of Oz sitting there, you know, orchestrating the whole. You almost realize that it's a movie, that it isn't real.
Right.
The stranger thing, though, is on movies that have CG or effect shots, like Constantine or Timeline or the Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
Children of Dune. I scored a lot of those to nothing, to slugs, where it just, there's, you know, 15 seconds of a blue screen saying, there, you know, spaceship comes from left to right and blows up right now, and just descriptions of what's going on. That's always the coolest. I conduct all that, and I have all this crazy music, and there's, you know, the screen is blue. There's absolutely nothing on it. Then you go to see it, and how they time all the explosions and the visual perfectly to the music, that is a lot of fun.
So now, how would a score you write today differ from one you wrote that back in 1997?
Ooh. Well, I've learned a lot since 97. You know, I think one of the things we're talking about, which is this dynamics of the score, has... I pay a lot more attention to that. Kind of making the quiet moments really quiet, and leaving space for what's going on in the film to be done. I've also since then gotten more of a role on these films. I'm able to kind of give advice if I'm writing a piece and we need the scene to be longer, or it needs to be maybe edited a little different. I'm able to kind of jump in and do those things I wasn't allowed to before. So that changes kind of the approach. I'm more of a collaborative process with the filmmakers now, as opposed to kind of tacking on stuff at the end, just kind of polishing the movie. So for me, my whole role has changed on a film since 97. You know, in terms of the process, it's essentially the same. I write the same way. I do it, you know, I don't write through the computer. I write, you know, organically, or, you know, on just with live instruments and pencil and paper and all that kind of thing. So, you know, that process hasn't changed so much. It's just the style of the way I write. Has, and it's evolved, and I think I sound more like me now. I sound more like what Brian Tyler is supposed to sound like now than I did then, because I was still finding my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, you know, I want to sound like me. I don't want to sound like another composer.
Right.
You know, back then I just idolized, you know, it was like John Williams and you know, and you know, I would listen to Wagner and Chopin and think, oh my, this is amazing. I want to be like that. Where now
mm-hmm.
I'm more searching for my own voice and establishing that and trying to leave that as part of what I leave behind when I'm gone, you know, that people will say, hey, the Brian Tyler sound or something like that. You know, that's what I want. That's the goal, and I want that so badly that I want people to enjoy my music for what it is, not for what it sounds like or for what type of styles it echoes, but just for what it is.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of times that you don't actually use the computer. You're using a, you know, pencil and paper and
right.
that kind of thing. That's unusual for a lot of composers now.
Yeah.
What made you decide to go that way?
You know, I just think, you know, I came along, and scoring-wise, like, think about it, in 97, it was kind of the trend of going electronic, kind of in the what I call the impossible orchestra, which is, you know, people write through a sequencer on a computer,
right?
And it doesn't take into account the human element. Even if you have people play, if you write on a sequencer and then you have people play it, an orchestra play it, they're doing things that are unnatural to their own instrument. And it ends up sounding like a computer even when the live musicians play it. So for me, taking that out of the equation would I felt, keep it just more musical. And as a musician myself, you know, there's kind of a difference between composer and musician. And I, you know, my composer role is one thing, but my musician role is another. And my musician side keeps on telling the composer side, hey, don't forget about me. Remember, a human being still needs to play this to make it sound right. So write it for the instrument. Write it as if live people are playing it. Don't write it for the computer, because often people will write for the computer to just make the computer sound good. But then when it gets to the orchestra, it kind of falls apart. It feels a little flat.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like a reaction to what was happening. I'm a big fan of kind of the older scores, and there's a bit of a factory mentality sometimes to scoring nowadays, and especially when I was starting. To me, I wanted to bring back some of the live element of writing, the human element of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I do in scores like in Annapolis, there's some tracks that are kind of more modern sounding. For instance, they use drums and things. But even on those, I don't want to use sampled and synthesized drums. And I play the drums live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if at least if there's a human being even playing a keyboard behind it, and it's not being fixed and quantized and perfected by a computer, if you leave that natural human element in, I just think music is in the imperfections. That's what makes music beautiful. It's the imperfections of it. So to me, taking the computer out of the equation, it makes it more musical.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what does the future hold for you?
I have no idea. I have, you know, I kind of can look a few feet in front of me at any time. Right now, I'm scoring a film called Partition,
mm-hmm.
Which is takes place in 1947. It's set against an epic, you know, set against war. It's when Pakistan is being partitioned or separated from India.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a civil war, and people are trying to leave to get to Pakistan from India, and people from Pakistan are trying to get to, you know, the Indians in Pakistan are trying to get to India, and it's this war-torn love story between a guy and a girl that are on the wrong sides of the border, in a sense, and they fall in love, and it's a tremendous film, very powerful and epic. So I'm right in the middle of scoring that. It was shot in India, and they have a couple more weeks of finishing up. I think they're out there right now shooting on location. So that's going on, and then I'm going right into Fast and Furious 3 with the director of Annapolis, Justin Lin.
Right.
And that's going to be just about the most opposite from Partition as possibly can be, which is the way I like it. You like to every movie change it up, especially I just came off scoring William Friedkin's new movie.
Right.
I'd done The Hunted with him before, and he just did a film called Bug, which is kind of a movie about paranoia, mm-hmm. and it's probably the darkest movie I've ever done, and so again, that contrast was Partition, but that movie comes out in October. I think Fast and Furious actually is the first to come out. It comes out in June,
mm-hmm.
and then Partition, I believe, is in the winter. It's winter season films. Those three are kind of juggling right now, and we'll see. The scores will be coming out sometime this year.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian.
Sure.
I really appreciate the time you've given me today.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure.